Hello and welcome to the CEO Blindspot Show, where leaders lead leaders. I'm your host, Birgit Camps, and today's guest is Robin Koller, who is the CEO of LeadSkill, which is a technology-driven marketing services company that has clients like Amazon, BMW, DocuSign, and LinkedIn. Welcome to the show, Robin.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. When I looked at your background and your company, it seems like you really are a proponent of transparency, expertise, quality, and connectivity. But I am curious, how did you learn all your business skills? Was it, you know, you had MBA from University of Westminster and an undergrad in psychology. You were a table tennis champion. But tell me a little bit about why you think you have done so well in starting several companies and still going strong.
Wow, that's a good question. Thank you. Firstly, let's qualify doing well. For me, I think survival is underrated. Okay, so having managed to run a business for 22 years, that's one definition of doing well. And I don't think that the definition for everybody of doing well is something that can be measured in terms of the size of the company or turnover or profit or wealth. I do think that doing well, it could be measured differently in terms of job satisfaction, the number of years colleagues stay happy in their work with us. Mm-hmm. Perhaps in terms of the drawing on the psychology background, understanding the morality of psychology, understanding that people's sense or need to develop and be moving towards a goal is important. And perhaps that's another definition of doing well as well, is that people who you work with feel like they are progressing towards their goals. So it's an interesting qualification on quote unquote doing well.
Yeah.
In terms of setting up different businesses, what I would say is that to a great extent, they all center on one machine, one piece of software that we've been developing for 15 years. A data processor that moves data across the World Wide Web from capture points through to CRM and data activation solutions like email platforms and lead nurturing systems. So although there are different businesses in the group, they all leverage and all exploit and utilize the same underlying technology.
So it sounds to me like you have figured out how to combine the best of technology with understanding people and what it takes to build a company, because turnover can be very costly and very challenging. And I saw on Glassdoor, you had so many high ratings from employees who love working for and with you.
We do. Although we do have one negative rating, which is really quite amusing, where we really badly managed a colleague's deodorant usage or lack thereof problem. So keep learning, right? We do keep learning. I think for all of us who are running our own businesses or running leading teams, that we have to keep learning. We have to make sure that our colleagues are progressing, they're learning more, they're becoming more skilled, they feel like they're moving forwards towards their personal as well as career goals, and we can do that alongside them, I guess. If you look after your team will look after you. There's a saying that's resonating for us at the moment, which is that the company you keep is the company you keep. And that's very much around the people.
Well said. Well, then I do have to ask one other clarifying question around something that I saw you say is that you value circles of knowledge rather than squares of hierarchy. Can you elaborate on what that means in your company?
Well, I can certainly elaborate on the hierarchy piece. We're a small business, and we're 46 people worldwide of a full-time nature. It's not necessary to have a very steep hierarchy. I think one can easily fall into the trap of having too few direct report, as well as, of course, too many, but too few, and making it less culturally acceptable for anybody in the firm to move straight from the bottom to the top and have a conversation. So I keep myself available. I have no special desk, no special room. I am a colleague as much as I am the ultimate decision maker at times. So that's the squaring off, if you like, of a hierarchy, going to the circular. Important, I think, that I also make a point of asking other people, younger people, junior people in the business, what they think. The mantra there often is that we encourage people in the company to be what we call big heads. You know, you lift your head above the parapet, somebody will shoot at it. But if you don't lift your head above the parapet, then you can't be seen, and you certainly can't be seen to make a difference. So going to everybody in the company and saying, look, whatever position you have in the company, what can we do? Can we buy you a business book? What course would you like to do? How would you like to impact, not just today, but over the next period and further on with regard to performance of a company, right?
Yeah.
So that's the other part of that circular piece. They put their time in for money. They get money out, but that's a value exchange. And sometimes it's not as straightforward as just time for money. There are other ways of having value for what we do.
Well, one thing that I can see is another reason probably why you succeed so much is you really look at how do you define wellness. And I can hear that you also look and see what makes sense in a way that is well for everybody.
Well, that's one of the joys of a small business, right?
Yeah.
I can't really speak for what it's like to be the CEO of a large business, and I don't even know what the definitions are. You know, is large 500 or 1,000 or 50,000, but certainly 50 people is not large. So I have the benefit of being able to see across the whole team, look at everybody. By being in the office every day, I can see their body language. I can see their facial expressions. I can see how engaged they are when they talk to other colleagues, how engaged they are when they're sitting in a meeting and I'm not the subject that they're staring at. So important, I think, yes, to keep a broad perspective on everybody and to see what you can do to make their life a little better. People spend more time at work sometimes, often, than they do with the people they really love, the people that matter most. So the least we can do is ensure that it's as positive as possible.
Yeah. Well, I can see how you succeed. And when I say succeed, you've been around for more than 5 years. And you know, that's, I think, 80% of businesses don't make it past 5 years.
Yep.
And you have low turnover. But then I have to ask, how did you learn to lead people? Do you think it was your psychology degree? Or because it sounds like you've never had a blind spot as a leader. Did you ever struggle as a leader?
Well, I've absolutely got blind spots, that's for sure. And I definitely struggle. So I remember acutely being hauled into my boss's office as a younger, more arrogant or opinionated or obstinate version of myself, and being told point blank that I had to remember that people had to want to work with me, that it wasn't that they just had to work with me. It wasn't that a default that came, that they had to want to work with me. And I felt that was a moment for sure, one of the moments of my career where I got a proper lesson that stayed with me for 25 years or more. And I think we forget that. I think we forget that people do have to want to work with us.
Mm-hmm.
So a struggle could be holding that in mind in a time of pressure. I think sometimes when we're under pressure, we can be so focused on the problem or the situation that we're facing, and the challenge in front of us, that we forget about the people and the emotional states of people in the team.
Yeah.
And I think I have that blind spot today. I think I still can focus too much on the problem and the objective and the outcome. And I have to check myself and be checked. And part of solving blind spot problems is to recognize what you're weak at. And sometimes to hire people who are very strong in those areas and then tell them that their job is to keep you right.
Well, I think you may have answered the question I had coming, which is how did you shift then once you realized that? But it sounds like you've hired some people who are not afraid to tell you, hey, Robin, you're doing that thing again.
Absolutely that. There's a sort of jovial approach to this. I also remember somebody telling me once that, you know, when you're a leader, your job is not to be popular.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your job is not to be liked. Your job is to lead. And I remember joking back to another colleague and hips of saying, well, the fact I am liked is a bonus. And of course, I say that very tongue in cheek, and every boss should, I think. I don't know if I am liked, it is a bonus. It's because the objective is to lead first. But again, people have to want to work with you. So if you can keep that virtuous circle together, I think we're doing well.
Yeah.
But I don't want to pretend for 1 minute I haven't got blind spots. I absolutely do.
Yes, well, appreciate you being open about it, because when people look at your background, or at least when I did, when I looked at your company, leadskill.com, I see a lot of successes according to the world, including with people. So you continue to be in companies beyond 5 years. You've even bootstrapped your company and even succeeded there. But have you ever been through a crisis as a company? And if so, how did you make it through, or how would you recommend other leaders make it through crisis?
We absolutely have been through very difficult and testing times. What I can remember is recognizing that we didn't really have enough money to make payroll for the next 3 months, and that it would take more than 3 months to turn around the performance of the business. I remember at that moment turning to everybody in the company and saying that if we all took a 50% pay cut, we would have enough time to make the changes and the repairs and the fixes. And I remember everybody agreeing to that. So that was that certainly was a crisis moment. And I'm not suggesting that it's very easy, A, to ask people to take a pay cut, and B, to get that universal agreement to doing it. But in that instance, it was about focusing intensely on the fact that we were a company, and if we wanted to be a firm, and maybe the secret is in the language that we use, language can be a trap, but if we wanted to be a firm, then we had to be firm with each other first. In a way, businesses make their own problems. Most of the problems that we have made in the crises that we faced have been self-inflicted. They're not the result of some macroeconomic factor or some major sector change. They're normally a result of internal behavior or apathy or lack of focus. That was a crisis point. And I think it's interesting to share there perhaps is that I've often thought of money not as, you know, a commodity or as a utility, you know, this bartering and exchange concept we have where we swap our time for money and then we swap our money for other things that we need, want for our families and loved ones or our selfish selves later. But in business terms, money is often time. I often think there's a correlation between money and time. So when we faced crises, I have attempted to look chronologically at the crisis. What is the time implication of this? How long will it take to solve the problem? And from there, pure the math around the money to see what the limited resources that we have and how then to make sure that there's enough of that limited resource to stretch across the time required. Then and only then can you work on the buy-in of the team to do the fix.
So there you go, looking at data again, right? Making sure that you could make decisions that way.
Money and data, right? Where money is a unit of time in business rather than just a balance in the bank.
Yeah. And so I have to ask, did you then turn it around within 3 months?
We did. We're still here. Yeah.
Yeah. So you accurately assessed that one. So anyway.
Yeah, I think that's the only other thing I would add on when I think back to that moment, you know, is that sometimes the behavior precedes the outcome in both directions, both good and bad. Mm-hmm. I certainly think that was a blind spot for me for a long time, that sometimes you think, well, we're doing all the right things. Why have we not got the results? And that can cause you to panic or change your behavior. But sometimes it's because the results follow doing all the right things. And conversely, one can be lulled into a false sense of security where one eases off a little bit or thinks that we've done enough of the right things or that we think we're doing the right things when we're not, and the results don't follow. That can be a serious blind spot right there.
Yeah.
But it's important to keep or try and understand the correlation between the behavior and the outcomes. Is it that the outcomes are within 2 months of the behavior, or is it longer? And then figuring out what the right tactics are and the longevity of that behavior and sticking to your guns, not being distracted.
Yeah. Well, speaking of time, as we start to wrap up the show, if people want to know more about your company, they can go to leadskill.com. But I really appreciate your openness and including your inquiry about what does well mean in terms of doing well as a company. So thanks again for sharing what you learned and for sharing the tips for other leaders.
It's a pleasure. I hope at least one tip helps one leader somewhere. And in exchange, I look forward to getting some refreshers and reminders from some of your other podcasts. Thanks for having me.